You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
The Around the NFL podcast are in charge of hiring a new Jets head coach.
Welcome to, and hire Sala already. Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I come to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Like, we just see each other too much. I have nothing left to say to you two. There's not a day that goes by that we don't see each other. And it is good, actually, to have this, you know, regular time. But even on the days off, it's like we'll be on a little Zoom meeting. So I get to see your outfits every day. It's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we're like going steady together, really, since March. But for many months longer than that. But, I mean, it's been heavy since March.
This is the divisional round playoff preview episode, and I am excited, as we all are. This is always so much fun, this week of football. It's the best teams in the league. The NFC East is not involved. And, boys, you know that I am the power rankings guy on NFL.com. It's how my bread gets buttered.
The Dan Hansis shout-out.
In the digital space, if you will. So I decided... since I'm involved with making lists and writing blurbs and being called an asshole by extremists and other troglodytes of the internet, I'm going to offer up a list, power ranking list, of the remaining quarterbacks
the
in the
Hansis
playoffs.
Shout out.
And I want you guys to tell me if you agree or disagree. Here we go. Number one, Patrick Mahomes. Number two, Aaron Rodgers. Little controversy.
What
right
is this based on? Like this year or just
right
what?
Now?
Like right now. Stand. Okay.
Right
heading
now.
Into the weekend.
Here and now. Number three, Josh Allen. Number four, Lamar. And that was tough because number five is Tom Brady. And I love how Tom Brady looks right now. But I think Lamar is just a little more special at this stage. Number six, close call, but Baker, Mark. How about that? Number seven, Drew Brees. And number eight, Jared Goff or John Wolford. Anybody have an issue with that order?
No, unfortunately. You know,
I'm the power rankings guy.
I kind of want to argue. This will be an article, I think, next week on QB Index. They usually at least do this in the playoffs at some point. It's usually this week. I would probably put Brady higher right now. So
than
I guess.
Lamar?
Yeah, it's tough though. Like if you're just basing it on the last month, you know, he's higher than Mahomes. I mean, so is Josh Allen. I would maybe put Josh Allen one.
Whoa.
Well, just right now, not
over
like
Mahomes
predicting the future.
And the MVP, Aaron Rodgers. See, now you're getting saucy.
I don't know.
Getting a little Bayless-y, to be honest.
And I think Brady's right there. I might go Allen. It's ridiculous how good those five are, that Lamar is either fourth or fifth with the way he's
playing. So do you have Aaron Rodgers ahead of Jared Goff or behind?
If Rodgers like third or something. They're all about the same. Those top five are all playing lights out. How much better can you play?
Yeah, that's true. We're going to get into all of the games. But listen, you know where we're at on this podcast right now, with Sessler and all the years of misery and now the glory. It would be silly if we started the show with anything else other than defending world champion Chiefs against Mark's Cleveland Browns. Ricky?
I knew that I never wanted to walk away from them. Would it be the same as the seventh or eighth grade version of me that lived and died so hard by this team? So hard. So hard. It cracked through a little bit. It did. It did. It did. So hard. I'm just one person that roots for this team. I knew that I never wanted to walk away from them.
All right, Mark, we get it.
I mean,
we're loyalists, so now it's paying off.
Mark, Thank you, I think. I'm not sure how to respond to that, but Erica up to her old tricks.
I wanted to make it kind of like a warm thing, and then when Ricky was done with her handiwork, it was a bunch of jokes. So, you know, but still, it's loving, ultimately. You're not the only Browns backer at NFL Media. In fact, one of our favorite men, the sixth man of the year. I call him the pipe. Greg doesn't. Nick Shook is also going to jump on now. What's up, Shook? Look at Shook. He's suited and booted. Hello, Nick Shook. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Wow. How are you feeling right now? Like, I don't have a theme song with a Jerry Maguire type Tom Cruise drops for you, but how are you feeling at this time with the Cleveland Browns?
I don't know if the Browns are going to show me the money, but after picking the Chiefs and getting my now weekly hate from Browns fans who just tell me they're disappointed in me more than anything, somebody last week wished that I would step on a Lego when I picked the Steelers over the Browns. So I respect that. But
that's a bad job.
Know.
That's a bad job, picking against your team in a game that they won.
Well, yeah, is it a case of – because I went on Cleveland radio, and one of the first things they asked was, why is Nick Shook, who, you know – You're a favorite son in that area. Why is Nick Shook continually punking the Browns in these predictions? And the answer that we came up with was a masterful touch of reverse psychology. Is it that or something else, Nick?
Yeah, that was a Nathan Zagura special, I'm sure. It's the fact that I pick with my brain and not my heart. And my brain has told me last week that the Browns had every excuse in the world to lose that game, every reason in the world to lose that game, and that it's going to be a tough battle for them to win this one. But I did dive into some numbers and gave me some encouragement. So I'm feeling better, I think, about this game than I did last week. But still, I am going to stick with my prediction of the Chiefs being the Browns.
Shook, you know, I think that's a bad job. I think you got to pick the Browns, but you're a serious analyst man, hence the suit. You're going on network later. I get that. I also want to, like, connect the dots again. Long has it been a mystery of this podcast. Shook goes to work for the Cleveland Browns, you know, quits that gig out of nowhere, comes back to us, and we're all happy about that. You always wondered if there's some type of bad blood between Shook and the Browns. Well, now let's see what's going on with these playoff picks.
No, there's no bad blood. It's just, I think 20 years of the Browns being bad has robbed me of the ability to pick with my heart.
Okay, that's fair enough. And let's get into this game, boys and Greggy, and because, you know, the Browns, and I said this earlier in the week, it feels like a house money game for them because the season is a success. But at the same time, I don't want to dismiss them as having a chance here. And it does go back to the version of the Chiefs, Greg, that we've seen in the back half of the season. And I know that the kind of popular line here is to dismiss all those close wins as a team that was kind of going through the motions, waiting for this moment. And that makes sense. But at the same time, that was what was happening when this team played competitive games. And now you take 20 days off for most of the most important players. You know, maybe the Browns are in a decent spot here with where this Chiefs team is.
Right. I guess that's all possible, that they were playing, you know, just hard enough to barely win. That doesn't really make sense to me. But it's been since week 8 that they won by double digits. And they've had problems on both sides of the ball. But in this game, what really matters to me is their defense. Remember everyone started the year being like, hey, the Chiefs got a defense now. It's like Patrick Mahomes doesn't even need to put up that many points.
I love when you do that voice, by the way, Greg.
Yeah, they were 31st in expected points allowed since week 9. They're a bad defense. They give up plays on the ground. That's a problem. They can't get off the field on third down. That's a problem against the Browns. They've got two really good players in Chris Jones and Honey Badger, and otherwise they've kind of struggled. And Stefanski's just outcoached Mike Tomlin with the plan that he put up. He knows how to find mismatches. These are two top five or six offenses against the two worst defenses left still in the playoffs. So I see it being like the Raiders Chiefs. I see it being back and forth, some long possessions, very few defensive stops, and that's going to make it a lot of fun. I'm really surprised that the Chiefs are 10-point favorites. I don't like that at all. I like the Browns a lot better there.
I think, you look at how we analyzed the game last week, and it was simple, but one of the aspects was you've got to try to befuddle Big Ben and do something on defense. And they got a lot of gifts, and that changed the game, immediately and instantly. And by the end of the first quarter, everything you would have thought would have happened with Cleveland and Pittsburgh went out the gate. When I think about gifts against the Chiefs, it's punts. Can you stop drives? There's no reason to think this can't be a high-scoring game. We're in January, and the Cleveland Browns, their strength is an offensive line that even when a guy goes out of the lineup, it just seems to be that Bill Callahan has put together a pretty seamless system here where they thrive. They absolutely dominated the Steelers. Baker Mayfield, everyone thought he's going to be detonated by their pass rush. He wasn't. I think they can score points in this game. I think you're going to need Jarvis Landry to play like a king because Baker Mayfield's going to have to make some throws along with the run game. And I don't hate the idea of Myles Garrett and even Adrian Claiborne going up against the likes of like Mike Remmers and Eric Fisher at tackle. I think that's an issue. If Mitchell Schwartz is not able to go, that's an area of concern for the Chiefs to some degree.
Yeah, I think it's it might sound a little bit cliche based on, how do you win a football game on the road in the playoffs? Well, you do it by keeping the ball out of the opponent's hand, but that might be the Browns' best option here, which is, of course, you would do that with the run game. We know that the Chiefs have struggled against the run. The difference, though, is that the Browns, no matter who they're playing, if they face stacked boxes, they're actually finding success. Now, they didn't against the Jets when they were in that tough spot a few weeks ago. But on average, over the season, nobody has faced a stacked box more often or more defenders on average in the box than the Browns because every defense knows they're going to run the football. So if you can effectively run the ball, that's great. But what you really need to do more than anything is to establish a balance, whether it's those quick passes that Baker Mayfield had against the Steelers or whether it's handing it off to Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb and really just keeping the ball out of the Chiefs' hands. Because this Browns defense, I saw somebody tweet last week, I thought it was pretty accurate, held together by duct tape. I know they're getting some guys back. Denzel Ward being back is a huge one, but it's still not a good defense, and you don't want to get into this track meet or a shootout with this team because you're bound to lose that game.
There are layers of to the onion when you talk about the win over the Steelers for Cleveland, and one of them that I don't think is getting enough play and discussion is the way Baker played in the game, because that was all set up to be one of the most memorable comeback wins in history, like Frank Reich against the Oilers type comeback with the Pittsburgh offense going up and down the field in the second half. And it seemed like things are going to unravel. All you needed was the opposing quarterback to make a big mistake or two. And I thought Baker again in a big spot. And I mentioned this in the preview last week because he did it again when the spotlight was on against the Ravens. He made a bunch of big throws. He wasn't the star of the game. He wasn't the reason they won. But again, he showed that he likes the moment. He's not someone that's going to cower from it. He's a little hot and cold as a quarterback for my liking. But when he enters this stage, I like Baker Mayfield in this game for all the reasons I've stated. I think he's going to come in and make plays. He's not going to be the reason they lose. I really don't think that's going to be the case.
He's like a lot of starters. Where if you protect him, he's throwing it great, and he's got a little extra than most starters because he's just more talented as a thrower. Like when I compared him to Kirk Cousins, I think there's some similarities, but he's just more talented throwing the ball into tighter windows when he needs to. And the difference the last couple weeks is he's made a couple second reaction plays. I mean, he's not going to be Mahomes or Allen, but he's made a couple runs and a couple plays where he got pressured and then made a play. And that's it. Just keep a couple. If he can keep a couple extra drives alive by doing that, and there's every reason, again, to believe he can against the Chiefs. Because if you talk to the Chiefs fans, they're sick of their defensive line. They're sick of Frank Clark not being a factor. They're a little sick of their offensive line too. Like that's where their weaknesses were this year. It was up front in both sides, and especially for the Cleveland offense, like that feels like a mismatch.
I mean, Baker last week, he had 2.34 seconds in terms of time to throw, quickest all season. They found a way to counter Pittsburgh's rush, and so the same can apply to Kansas City.
Steelers had a Golston, by the way, our old favorite. Didn't touch Baker Mayfield one single time.
Right, and think about this, and I get that like this gets kind of just washed out of the system because we're kind of tired of the storyline. They practiced for like 3 hours. And the week before that, they practiced for like 3 hours.
Well, that's been exposed this year. Practice doesn't matter anymore.
Maybe it's good. I mean, seriously, to be like, fresh at this
time. Yeah, I'm not really joking. It's like maybe once you're in the season, the idea of like grinding it out and going through drills and stuff, it's being shown. You would have never seen this until a global pandemic came along. But, you know, that has been – this isn't the first team that we've seen this season that missed practice all week and then showed up and played a great game.
Yeah. I would say, though, it says something about the Cleveland Browns that someone like Blake Hance, who met Baker Mayfield the morning of the game, had been signed off the Jets practice squad, came in and played the way he did. That there's
coaching.
A lot of examples of that where with no preparation, they did well. I'm with you, Dan. They don't need to be doing tackling drills on a Wednesday. But, yeah, I think that the idea that practice simply doesn't matter is probably more of a media thing than actual.
And Patrick Mahomes, because – you know, you can't speak too much about Patrick Mahomes, and he's been out of the NFL world for weeks now, literally. By the time he plays, takes his next snap, a meaningful snap, it will be 20 days. And that's one thing I do not think is going to happen. This talk, will the Chiefs be rusty? I actually went back. When's the last time Mahomes missed, you know, extended weeks and then came back? It was when he hurt his knee last season. He missed 2 weeks of that injury, came back 65 or 70%, as everyone remembers, and threw for 446 yards and 3 touchdowns in a last-second loss to the Titans. So, like, he's going to be okay. It's the issues that we're bringing up with the Chiefs' defense that I have more concerns about. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, that's another focus point on offense. He's been practicing in a limited fashion, their rookie running back, after sustaining the hip and ankle injuries in Week 14. We'll see where he is by the time this weekend comes along, because he's an important part of what they do. Not vital compared to, obviously, the passing game, but he did make them better.
Yeah, and to Greg's point about the offensive and defensive line worries in Kansas City, the reason that the first moment I realized the Browns had a legitimate shot of pulling off the upset last week was when I realized that they were winning at the point of attack on both sides of the ball. There was an early sequence where Larry Ogunjobi sent Marquise Pouncey into the backfield and stuffed a third and short attempt that Ronnie Harrison cleaned up that really, to me, kind of opened my eyes and said, wow, like, you know, they want this more. Now, obviously, it's more than just wanting it, but the one thing that worries me is if Baker Mayfield, you know, with that quick time to throw that Mark mentioned, if he drops back and throws one of those interceptions that he's been known to do a few times just off of a pre-snap read where he doesn't even take the time to see if somebody's sliding down into coverage, that could be a momentum shifter in this game that I kind of worry about from the Browns' perspective. But they've shown that they've been able to avoid those mistakes for the most part recently, so we'll see.
Like, I feel like we're a little too down on the Chiefs, probably. We should get
that's
yeah.
That's what I feel right now. That's the vibe I'm getting. But I understand. Listen, we got Shook and Sessler on the show. We're talking about the Browns, 2 wins from the Super Bowl. It's going to seem like the Chiefs have no shot. But, you know, Nick Shook did pick the Chiefs. Shook, you going to lock up the Chiefs in this game?
No. I'm going to stay 1-0 all time.
All right. Good. Shook, you will be appearing on NFL Network as you do regularly. What do you talk when you do your network appearances? I know Greg watches because it's on TV at all times.
We're going to be taping during his appearance, but I'll DVR it, Shook, and watch it later.
I appreciate that's commitment, Greg. I appreciate that. It's next gen stats. Usually it's rankings. At this point, we're previewing one stat that gives an underdog a shot or a reason for hope, and that's we'll be going to the Browns as one of them in a little bit.
Do you do that with Siciliano?
Yeah, typically it's either Siciliano
or this place
Red.
Is lousy with Browns fans. This is getting a little bit
It is a little wild, which is, by the way, why I feel bad about what I'm going to do next, which is lock up the Chiefs.
That's fine. I have to
upset or annoy either Mark or my daughter, Ellis, who I know I this house is too much football focus when she asked me earlier who I'm locking up. Like she know, and I was like, she's like, don't lock up the rest. So if I'm going to annoy either her or Mark, it's going to. Sorry.
You can't take down Siciliano. He's over the moon.
Locking them up.
It's got to be one of those two.
I think we're up. I think we're up to an aggregate of 20 point in terms of laying wood favorite for Greg locking up in the playoffs so far. So, you know, he knows what he's doing. Everybody knows what you're doing, Greg.
What, taking the team that I think has the best chance to win. Imagine that.
Get those heavy favorites. All right, Shook, thanks for coming on. We love you. You're the sixth man of the year for a reason, and enjoy this game.
Yep. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
See you soon.
All right. Good stuff. All right. So I got the Chiefs, too, but I've locked up against the Browns already in the postseason. I'm just not going to do that.
No, you were taught your lesson.
Yeah
exactly.
Didn't work.
And Greg, you were going to be taught your lesson in 3 days.
I know. I don't feel good about it. I
hope you don't.
I don't feel good about it. I like all four underdogs this weekend to cover at least.
You know how I know both of you guys are playing and you guys are tight right now trying to win this title? Because I'm just an observer now. I think I'm three or four games out. You're locking up the Chiefs, double-digit favorite. Sessler not locking up the Browns, which just makes sense that he would just go all in on Cleveland, but he wants the title so bad that he can't truly get behind the Browns in this game. So I'm, you know, just watching the world burn here.
I think that's it's not exactly analyzed correctly. I have thought very hard about locking up the Browns, but my one thing is that it puts too much into one effort. I like to spread my lock around from where my emotional side is. That's when it doesn't go well. So it's more about that. I don't want to be worrying about locks during that game.
Okay. I can't imagine you would be either way, but you know, this is, you know,
I predicted them to win, and it's not, and I understand when you say that Nick Shook is doing what would be respected by picking the Chiefs. I picked them to beat the Steelers last week, and I believed it, and I believe that they're going to win. I really, really do.
I can see it. You can see it. I mean,
everyone is about 3 weeks behind where the Browns actually are. Now, maybe I'm completely beyond where they are, and I'm wrong. We'll see. But I think people are not tracking them correctly.
What? I think there's a chance there. That's why I like.
Where were we in week 17 on that, Mark? I mean, I know you're excited and you have every right to be, but that team played poorly in week 17 and barely beat the backups of the Steelers. How could people be behind? They lost to the Jets before that.
Well, it's like what I would look closely at what happened in that Jets game. That wouldn't happen.
Oh, I did. I watched
10 times in a row. And I think that I think there's something else beyond the X's and O's here with some of these teams in the playoffs. And I think Cleveland is feeling themselves a little bit in a way that, you know, I can't really put words to.
And the Chiefs are not as good an offense, right? I know we're spending a lot of time in this game, but the Chiefs, every number says it. Their offense peaked in 18. It was a little worse last year, but then got going. And right now, their offense is fifth, or, you know, third or fourth in the league, you know, in DVOA and everything. Like, they're not quite where they were last year or the year before. I really believe that. Now,
Chiefs are going to score 37 points.
Of course. I'm just saying, like, they're not quite the same team right now. Maybe they'll flip the switch and we'll all be wrong.
All right, let's move on. The Ravens, they moved on with that 20-13 win over the Tennessee Titans. Great performance by their defense. Lamar made that special play with his legs. Their reward for advancing out of wild card round is a trip to Orchard Park to face the Bills, who just barely got by the Colts 27-24. And a back and forth game that really was a coin flip game. And it seemed like, I don't know, just if we're talking about the good fortunes and positive vibes around the Browns, Bills too. All the things that went right for the Bills with those sideline boundary catches by Gabe Davis, the offsides drawing the Indianapolis defender offsides, the fumble late in the game that ended up in the arms of the Bills offensive lineman. It just worked out for the Bills, and I think they're going to have to be better to beat the Ravens, who obviously are surging right now. Six straight wins, and this is a Lamar Jackson versus Josh Allen special. Two studs out of the 2018 NFL draft. What are you thinking on this one, Greg?
I'm so excited. Like, I just checked while you're talking there your power rankings, just because I'm curious. Because to me, these are – I would go Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, 1-2-3. And I don't think there's like a super dominant team in the NFL, but I could see either one of these teams winning the Super Bowl.
I got Chiefs, Bills, Packers.
Right.
Ravens.
I saw you had so you had three of the top four, but that's how I go right now. The Ravens' defensive performance last week, really the last couple weeks, but they convinced me last week, was so impressive. I think Josh Allen, like I just said, is playing quarterback at a level that there's almost nothing you can do. Everyone is always looking for the person to compare Allen to. And the obvious one, you know, if you just take away the physicality, I guess, in the running, which is a big deal, but is Mahomes. Because if you don't keep him in the pocket, and this is true of both of these quarterbacks, you're dead. But with Allen, the difference is, like, the throws he's making outside the pocket are just crazy. I mean, they're just crazy. The arm strength and almost the creativity of what he is tries to go for, it's just crazy. And
the flick of his wrist on that deep pass, as an example of what you're saying, last weekend, it's just like there are very few guys, and Mahomes maybe is the only other one, that can make that throw so effortlessly.
Right, and you can kind of put up the perfect defense for him, and he's still going to get you. And one thing I was looking for heading into last week, and they did it, was are they going to start calling plays for Allen running more? And they did. And that was a big part of last week's game. And I think that's something regular season, maybe not as much. Postseason, we're going to do it. And so I love mobile quarterbacks. These are two, you know, might be the best mobile quarterback matchup we've ever seen in the playoffs. It's just, it's awesome.
I adore this matchup. I mean, it's a quarterback matchup we never would have seen 10 years ago. It wouldn't have even been something you could have imagined 20 years ago. And it's two teams that have embraced what their quarterbacks have to offer. And a lot of it is, like, I think the coaching matchup here is fascinating. Dan, I like what you said, though. I'd be a little concerned about Buffalo's defense. They've been better over the past, you know, month plus, but they gave up 472 yards last week. I think we were a little cold, not just us, but in general, people were a little icy towards the Colts last week and their chances, because I think some of the energy around Buffalo and the way Buffalo was playing, Colts put up a real good fight in that game. But to me, it was like Buffalo overcoming in the first half starts, you know, three starts inside their 11-yard line, a fourth at the 15, like terrible field position early on. And they just made play after play and I think got over the hump almost psychologically in a game where it was like Buffalo, just like these other teams, needed to get that playoff win. And there was, all, you know, Buffalo was more like everyone's picking Buffalo. That's a tough place to be. And there might have been some nerves here and there, but they worked their way out of it. But then you look at the Ravens, same thing for them. Down 10-0. The way that they battled out of that was one of the most, I thought, resilient showings by any team all year. And the Ravens, after that moment, when Lamar Jackson had that 48-yard run, two things were happening. I thought, one, rip off the Band-Aid. The Ravens are here. They're going to do what they need to do. But Lamar Jackson, once he gets going like that, you have to almost view him as unstoppable. And the Titans had no answer. And so I don't love their passing game, but I love that they get enough passes through the air for Lamar to make them versatile enough where they're not a one-trick pony. They're extremely dangerous. I thought that Greg Roman had one of his better games. You know, second quarter through the end, one of the better coaching games he's had all year. He's been totally ignored as a head coaching candidate this time around. Same with Don Wing Martindale. I think that's a complete oversight. These are two of the best coordinators in the game, and the Ravens, to me, will take this thing right to the final minutes.
I think it was overlooked, to your point, Mark, how dangerous a spot the Bills were in last week, just because there was so much like assumption that the Bills, forget about winning wild card weekend, we'll see you in Arrowhead at the championship game. Like, that was where everyone's heads were at, and maybe still is. And it wasn't the Chicago Bears that was waiting for them in that wild card round. It was a very good Colts team. So good on them for being able to hold off what really felt like, if there's ever such thing, and I know this, Claibon might faint when he hears this, if there's ever such thing as a trap game in the playoffs, that's what the Bills had to get past last weekend, and they did it. So good on them. To your other point about the defense, they gave up, close to 500 yards. They didn't have a turnover. And what spooked me, and if I'm a Buffalo fan, especially with someone as special as Lamar Jackson now coming into the building, was at after a touchdown with 14:11 to play, it's 24-10 against the Colts. And you think, oh, we got away. You know, we nearly got picked off there, but we got the game under control. We're going to take it home. Colts get the ball, 7 plays, 75 yards, touchdown in 2.5 minutes.
Mostly on the ground.
Bills come back, kick a field goal to make it 27-16, calm things down a little bit again. Colts get the ball back, 5 plays, 76 yards in under 2 minutes to make it 27-24. That was not a good look for the Buffalo defense, which showed no ability to close out the game. And oh, by the way, Phillip Rivers had first and 10 inside Buffalo territory with a minute to play. Didn't get closer. You give the Bills credit for that. But that defense needs to be better in this spot.
Well, they also have shown that this isn't a one-time thing. So they gave up more than 200 yards twice this year. They've given up more than 200 yards seven times since McDermott's been there, which is among the worst in the league. It's a defense built to stop the pass first. It's a little bit of a lighter, faster defense. They give up runs to the outside. The Patriots ran all over them twice. They gave up more than 160, I think another three or four times, including last week. And so, okay, a team that runs to the outside well can present problems. Oh, hello, Ravens. I mean, I know they shut down the Ravens pretty well last year, which, you know, is something to think about, you know, in that matchup in the regular season where both quarterbacks really struggled. I mean, Josh Allen to a much bigger degree, but Lamar struggled too, considering it was his MVP season. But they need their guys up front to step up, like all their stars. Jerry Hughes had a bad game. Tre'Davious White had a bad game last week. He's going to be matched up on Hollywood Brown. We give Hollywood Brown so much grief. I mean, if there's such a thing as clutch, I don't quite believe it in this way, but like his best two games of his career are his two playoff games. He showed up and was great last week. He won that matchup over and over, a lot of key first downs, and they went to him. Man,
has he now progressed from Hawthorne to Hollywood? He's all the way
he's
back?
He's Hollywood. Well, yeah. Here's the thing. Wasn't it always like Hollywood, Florida? So in a way, it like never, you know, it was always kind of a small town.
Oh, I had
town.
No idea that.
That's, I didn't yeah, know. That's I, a I, aha I, don't, moment I didn't realize any man named themselves after Hollywood, Florida. That feels...
or somewhere. I could be wrong, but I don't think it was Hollywood, California. It was a different Hollywood.
Well, that was his first 100-yard game since week one. And so you're right. They needed it. And, you know, it's no small thing that after that first quarter where the Titans totally exposed the Ravens, I thought that their linebackers, their secondary grew stronger as the game went along. They wind up allowing 209 total yards and 13 points, shutting down Derrick Henry, shutting down Tennessee in general after the first quarter. And to me, that's just, when Marcus Peters is going to make some play in this game, you're going to get one of these Raven-esque turnovers that puts the Bills in a tight spot. So to me, this thing is one of the tougher games to predict. Well, basically since Baltimore, Tennessee a week ago, that's how these games go.
I'm taking the Ravens, and I feel okay about it because I think Allen is going to just – I actually think he has more burden on him than Lamar even, because I think the Ravens' defense is going to be better, and I think he's got more of a running game. And so I think Allen is just going to have to be incredible, and he obviously could be. But I do like, you know – when you watch this Ravens team, they have the sort of the feel, it's such a stupid thing to go off, but they have the feel of a team that I can just imagine Super Bowl features being written about, with this veteran defense full of badasses, Judon and Campbell and Peters and Humphrey. And they've all, McPhee suddenly shows up. He goes over to Chicago. He comes back. It's like all these guys, these are grown men. Like they came out and balled last week on defense. They have that Ravens feel. And I don't know. I can just see them continuing to win.
I have the Chiefs over the Browns by a field goal in a close game. I had to submit my picks to NFL.com. I have Ravens 28, Bills 27. That type of game.
Yeah.
We'll see. I think it's hard. It's really hard to pick this game as a blowout in either direction. It becomes to me basically a coin flip game. I'd like to see the Bills advance because I love the story and the fans and all that. But it feels like just something special going on in Baltimore now with that defense rising and Lamar. Now, it should be said, I say that and I pick the Ravens. And I think some of my misgivings about the defense in Buffalo got me nervous. And that's how it led to the picking the Ravens. You know, the Ravens only had 20 points last week. You get all caught up in the big play by Lamar. But overall, that wasn't a huge offensive performance. Is he going to be able to pass the ball if Josh Allen has another big day? Hey, this is a great game.
I sent picks to the same place, and I'm looking at what I suggested here, and I'm not totally thrilled with it. But I picked Bills 27, Ravens 18. I guess in that world, it's just the collapse of the Ravens probably late in the game or something. As we get closer, I feel like it's a field goal type game.
One thing I noticed last week is like on the read option plays, like Lamar's not handing it off anymore. They actually stopped Lamar many times. in put them in long yardage situations. But he knows, like, I'm the best player on the field. I'm going to pop a couple here. And he did. He popped like three or four, including that touchdown. It's he's no longer handing it off. He's just like, I'm going to take over.
I was going to say there was a lot of horizontal Lamar running in the first half of that game. And this is stupid to do this, but, you know, it also sometimes makes a point. Take out the 48-yard score and the run around the right end that clinched the game, and I would bet he was at about 3 yards a carry the rest of the way, maybe even
made
less,
some great throws, though. The third down throw to Andrews while he's running to the sideline at the end of the first quarter, like one of the deep outs to Brown. The thing about Lamar, he'll have a couple ugly ones, but if he has three or four pretty next-level ones, then you're in trouble.
Well, and Buffalo's given up more catches to tight ends than any team in the league. So, you know, they're Mark Andrews, when he's part of that passing game and central to it, they're pretty good.
Lamar also threw the ugliest interception of the playoffs,
right,
and it will not be topped.
One bad throw.
That's, and I don't need these backward passes to Marquise Hollywood Florida Brown.
You want to talk
those
about
were dangerous.
Hollywood Florida Brown stepping up, grabbing that ball behind his helmet in a one-score game. That thing was skipping through the back of the end zone for either a safety or a recovery for a touchdown.
Right.
You know, we talk about how Josh Allen got lucky on that fumble. We're talking about a totally different narrative and arc to Lamar Jackson's career if his wide receiver doesn't bail him out on that throw.
He's a walking example of quarterbacks getting too much credit for wins and too much blame for losses. I thought he actually played fine last year in the division round. Obviously, you can't turn the ball over like they did, but it's like he had an average Lamar Jackson game, which is really good, and everyone else around and right now I think is playing at a higher
problem
level.
Problem is, that's not how coverage of football works.
I know, but it's a good example. Is there really that much difference between Lamar for like right now and the way he played in that game a year ago? I don't think so.
All right, let's pause halftime and spin through the news, what's going on the coaching carousel and in other places. Some changes on coaching staffs by eliminated teams from the postseason. We'll start with Ryan Schottenheimer, who is out in Seattle. They part ways, citing, quote, philosophical differences. This offense in his three seasons, you know, was pretty hot and cold, but it was as hot as any offense in the league in the first half of this year, the hashtag Let Russ Cook era. But the collapse in the second half, and then what happened in the playoffs, dooms Schottenheimer. And I just want to say, like, I love Troy Aikman, but it felt so simplified. It left me almost angry when he said during the telecast last weekend that the decision was made when the Seattle defense was so bad in the first half that Pete Carroll said, oh, we have to stop this. We're changing the offense to fix the defense. It felt so simplistic. I would really love to know how this actually happened and led to the collapse, because it had to be more than just a scheme change. It just seemed like so many things went wrong.
They were still, you know, passing pretty heavily on early downs, and it's not like they totally went away from it. They just were worse. I think there's a pretty strong argument that the early season success was based on a number of unsustainable, amazing deep shot plays that you can't really scheme.
and
he played a bunch of division opponents who know how to stop him. And it's just, there aren't that many open receivers. But Russell Wilson was playing, you know, really poorly.
That game that they lost to the Giants, 12-17, I mean, there were whispers and there were a couple comments from people in Seattle that said that others kind of mimicked that and were able to use that. I mean, they went out and scored 40 points the next week, but that was against the Jets. But they were not the same offense other than that down the stretch. And I mean, if you are a Rams fan, though, you've got to be loving this, because there's nothing sweeter than beating a divisional opponent like the Rams did in the playoffs. And what comes out of it is total chaos for Seattle and the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. Everyone asking if Pete Carroll's like fallen off a tree branch at this point. And like the scheme's changing and we're firing coordinators. I mean, it's pretty ugly.
Few things jumble my brain more than when someone says the score of a sports game and it's the lower score first, as you just did. You said 12-17, and my brain is still recovering.
You want to know why I did that? Because I wanted to be accurate, which at least I was accurate in terms of the score, but I went to Pro Football Reference, and I went to Seattle's page, and so they list Seattle's score first to suggest that they were the losers. But then I read it to you, and so I'm the loser, because I said it that
You're
way.
A winner.
Don't beat yourself up.
The loser, because I blocked up the Chiefs, and I've been feeling Mark's You know, no, Mark and I were on good footing until now.
No, I couldn't be less annoyed at you. I think it's great that you did. So, you know.
I like that. Mark, how about this in terms of correcting yourself? How do you pronounce the last name of the departed Steelers offensive coordinator? Randy?
I say Randy Fichtner.
Fichtner.
All right. The Steelers, in other news, will not bring back offensive coordinator Randy Fichtner.
By the way, if I ever become the host of the show, it will never happen. I'm going to set you up for so many little trick questions that guarantee you had no idea how to say that, but you will allow me to tumble over that on a show that someone right now in Scotland is listening to thinking, that guy is an idiot. I will find a way to get back at you. I promise you.
I really do think we should. I've always said this. I think in the offseason we should do a show, put Sessler in the host chair. I'll be in the Sessler chair. I don't know what we'll do. Maybe Greg will produce. Ricky will be in the Greg chair. And we'll just mix it up. And then that would be a great spot for revenge, Mark.
Book it.
Start to plot it. Fichtner is not coming back. This isn't a firing because his contract was up. But Pittsburgh's another offense that everything was humming. They were 11-0, and Big Ben was having a really nice season. And then the wheels came off. They lost four of their final five regular season games, and then lost, obviously, to the Cleveland Browns. And so he's out. And the Steelers under Mike Tomlin, you know Tomlin's not going anywhere. They've had three head coaches since 1969, but changes were coming, Greg, and they're starting on the offensive side.
I feel like the pink slip started to be written the minute that Mike Silver went on NFL Network and said that Ben Roethlisberger was telling people that he started drawing up plays because the plays they were calling wasn't working. I mean, that's
ouch.
Not too subtle. Not too subtle from your Hall of Fame quarterback. And by the
and
way,
also not too subtle from you, Greg, throwing Big Ben under the bus as you always do whenever you have a chance.
In that sort of case, yeah, I love watching Big Ben play for all these years, but I don't like how he'll try to shift blame. That's not what you want out of your leaders. But this has kind of distracted from Mike Tomlin's defense absolutely collapsing down the stretch too. It wasn't just the offense.
Urban Meyer and the Jacksonville Jaguars, looks like this thing might happen. ESPN reported that the former Ohio State and Florida coach will be the Jaguars' next head coach. This thing is not official, but the negotiations have been reportedly been in the works for over a month, and we'll see now, Mark, if they get past the finish line. It's a flashy hire. It makes a lot of sense. Obviously, they're going to bring in Trevor Lawrence as well to reboot the machine. Whether it works, we'll see. Urban Meyer's been out of the game a long time, and he's never been a coach on any level in the NFL.
I think it's one of those hires where, kind of like when Nick Saban went to the NFL or Steve Spurrier, Chip Kelly to some degree, where it is going to be so under the microscope because Urban Meyer, and you know, we aren't huge college guys, but I feel like I've been hearing about Urban Meyer for decades and have never equated him with the NFL. I mean, for obvious reasons, he's reigned in college and he's been through a lot of ups and downs and controversies, you know, off the field with some stuff that happened at Ohio State. This is a polarizing hire, but he apparently was very interested in coaching Trevor Lawrence. So if you're a Jaguars fan, getting Trevor Lawrence is one, and the coach matters a ton. I wonder where we'll be 3 years from now with this kind of a hire. But Jacksonville fans, from where you were a month ago to where you are now, I mean, it's a completely different headspace, and it's one filled with new waves of hope. I mean, for a team that just had no future a few months ago.
All right. And real quickly, Brad Holmes is hired as the new general manager of the Detroit Lions. He's the former director of college scouting in Los Angeles for the Rams. And the Broncos reach a deal with George Patton to be their new general manager. He spent the last 13 years with the Vikings. He signs a 6-year deal to replace John Elway as GM. John goes, I guess, further upstairs and is the football czar, if you will. So there you go. That's what's happening in the league. Back to the playoffs. Greg, do you have anything about Patton you want to add?
Oh, yeah, I'm a huge Pattonite. I mean, this changes everything. Patton
He's been doing interviews for years. He finally got a job.
I mean, that is a tough job. GM with Elway, not just still in the building and not in some ceremonial role he is going to be all over General Patton.
It's funny. I've been reading some of these insidery reports. I don't know, man. It sounded like Elway was more like, I'm trying to get out of here and just chill. And the Broncos were like, can you stay around another year? And he was like, yeah, sure. But you're all good. You know, I'll help hire the GM. It sounds like he's just kind of over.
I don't think he'll be there 2 years from now.
He's a competitive man. We'll see. We'll see if he's able to stay out of the kitchen. All right, let's now move into the NFC and start with a great old showdown between old quarterbacks, the NFC South. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers coming off that win over the Washington football team last Saturday night, 31-23. They now head to the Superdome to face the number two seed Saints, who didn't get a bye, but they got something close to it with the Bears. It turned into essentially like a full squad scrimmage. And they won 21-9, and we're just happy that game's over and we don't have to talk about it ever again. And now what we get is two of the most prolific passers ever to play football. Two men, Brady, 43 years old. Breeze, I believe, is 41. It could be the last time, and likely is the last time, they'll ever be on the same field together with Breeze heading toward retirement. But Mark, we'll start this way. You never know with Tom Brady either. Now, Brady has been incredible this season, and he was good again last week. But the assumption here, obviously, is that Brady's going to continue to thrive and be in this situation for years to come. You just never know. There's so many outside factors. So there absolutely needs to be urgency for a 43-year-old quarterback, because you may not never get to the divisional round again. Great matchup between two old kings.
Well, I think it's the reason that we watch the NFL, for the chance to see at this late stage in their careers, you know, they're not that different than our age. They're older than you guys. And, you know, most guys that are 42 and 43 are lumps of clay at this point, and these guys are still doing what they're doing. It's impressive. Tom Brady, I think, you know, since maybe mid-December has been one of the best quarterbacks in the league, if not the best. I mean, and the deep ball is back. And so when I look at what happened in week 9 when they were shredded 38-3, even week 1, week 1 I throw out. But the week 9 shredding of Tampa Bay, it concerns me, because I think the Saints on both sides, like their offensive line and defensive line, you'd have to say, are big advantages that they can force their will on teams and win in different ways. But the Bucs have changed. They've evolved. And it's guys like Antonio Brown really flowering in this offense. And we've seen it with Rob Gronkowski. And I don't love their ground game, but this is a matchup where it's like a Pro Bowl of wide receivers if you look at both sides. And so I don't think Tampa Bay is going to put up 3 points in this one. I think this is going to be a completely different looking game. But the Saints, to me, match up well and have the advantage.
Yeah, it's one of those where it's like, is it about matchups or is it about who's playing better right now? Because the matchups say Saints, just because Peyton's 4-0 against Arians. You know, the way that game played out, a lot of these matchups go back before Arians was even there. Like Marshawn Lattimore's kind of dominated Mike Evans his entire career. Trey Hendrickson, you know, dominated Donovan Smith in those matchups and really kind of destroyed things. Cam Jordan probably gave Tristan Wirfs, who's been great at tackle all year, his worst game. So, like, those matchups seem to favor New Orleans. So does the coaching matchup. But then you just, like, look at it and it's like, Tom Brady is way better than Drew Brees. Like, way better right now. Like, it's almost underrated how well Brady's playing. Because, yeah, I tweeted something out about it. And it's like, well, look at who they've played.
Shut up.
It's like, okay, show me the other team. Okay, the Lions are terrible. Did anyone else put up 6 straight touchdowns against them? No. So relative to what everyone else did, no. The throws Brady's making. They played the number 3 DVOA defense last week. They put up 31 points and they went 1-for-5 in the red zone. They could have put up 40. Mm-hmm. The throws he's making are outrageous. He's playing so well. Brown is more incorporated. He had just joined the team. Godwin's playing better. So if anything, I think Brady's – it's almost over. Oh, they played the Falcons twice. Okay. The Falcons shut down –
I love that voice.
The Falcons shut down Patrick Mahomes the week after Brady – killed them.
Yeah, but the Chiefs aren't even trying right now. So
right.
I can do that
exactly.
Guy too.
Exactly. That's what they say. That's what they say. Okay. They shut down Herbert too. I don't know. I trust the offense. That's always I always pick these games, and I'm not picking against Brady right now.
Yeah, I love the way Brady's playing right now. And to some statistical backing from our great NFL research team that really paint the picture of how much the Bucs have changed since that 38-3 lowest moment against the Saints. The Bucs have averaged 34.1 points per game, nearly 440 total yards per game since their Week 9 loss to New Orleans, including the playoffs. When they lost to the Saints, they had the 3 points, of course, and 194 total yards. Brady was angry. They had no chance to get anything going. And now, though, Tampa Bay has the most total yards and second most points per game in the NFL since Week 10. But it's also, Mark, an unstoppable force versus an immovable object game, because the Saints have allowed 16.2 points per game since Week 10, including the playoffs. So they're playing great football. You could say nothing's changed for them since that most recent matchup on the defensive side of the ball. So why shouldn't we think now that Tom Brady and this offense will come down to earth a little bit when they face a familiar foe?
I mean, I come down to earth from where they've been, sure. I think they'll be more competitive than that last one. It's tough to beat a team three times, although I don't know what the science behind that is. I think it
says
tough to do
wrong.
Anything.
It kind of says it's relatively easy for what it's worth.
Well, then let's blow that narrative up. That's an absurd. I hear that from everyone, and it's
the numbers say they have the overwhelming the third time you play them, they have the overwhelming advantage usually
because they're a better team usually.
Right.
Well, that's got to be, but you would assume that you're meeting in the playoffs if you're doing it a third time. So
sure.
Both would be good. I think it's big that Devin White is back for the Bucs. He's been really disruptive. I love his speed. He can cause some chaos. I mean, the Bucs pass rush could give some problems to Breeze. You've got to figure out a way to do that. This Saints offensive line is one of, I kind of like a defense that's been as good as the Saints have. Over the back half of the season, the way their offensive line is playing, I kind of just cling to those things. I don't think it's going to be, I could see like 28-26 kind of type game. These
right.
NFC South teams are always wacky. I mean, please.
I'm worried about, if the Bucs defense way more than the offense. The defense is quietly kind of falling apart. They don't have much of a pass rush. To me, that's the biggest difference right now between right now and early in the year and last year. Shaq Barrett has about a third as many QB hits and sacks. You picked the wrong year to get on the old Shaq Barrett.
I did.
Right church, wrong pew.
Right. It's not happening, and this is a tough matchup. So last week, because they can't generate pressure, they're like sending crazy blitzes, and Taylor Heineke's lighting him up. That worries me. But can the Saints take advantage? They just haven't had many big plays. Even last week, it's like 5.1 yards per play, moving the ball. Breeze has one game out of his last seven where he's thrown for more than 7 yards per attempt. So it's dink and dunk and dink and dunk. Maybe that works.
He's turning 42. By the time you listen to this, he turns 42 on Friday. And when he got interviewed after the win on Sunday, it sounds like he's already a broadcaster. Like, he actually sounded like a dude doing like a hit for NBC during halftime of a Sunday night football game in Week 9. He's like already there. I don't want to play the. So I know we talked about on this pod where Bruce Arians is still plugged in. I think Drew Brees is 1 foot already in retirement.
Oh, stop! Isn't he more fired up than ever? I mean, he does not want his career to end. By the way.
Of course,
losing
the great things to come to an
losing
end,
to Tom Brady
to eventually.
Hey, I've been in the shadow of you my whole career. I'm obsessed with like numbers, but everyone thinks of Brady as the ultimate winner, and my career is going to end at home with a loss to you in Tampa. Oh my! Uniform that would be rough, but it would be.
I don't know
the
if
opposite if he wins.
Makes sense,
right? Maybe Sean Payton. I think Sean Payton could win this game. On his own. You're right. In the defense,
you gotta,
and everything.
It's all about kind of recalibrating when you talk about the Saints, what Drew Brees and the offense is, where they factor in terms of the whole the Saints stew here. It's just a part of it. It's not the main driving force. I like the Saints. I'm sticking with them as my NFC Super Bowl pick in a field goal game to get past the Bucks, but I don't feel good about this one, to be honest with you. I really think it's a game that can go the other way very easily. But I am picking the Saints by a field goal, 27-24.
We just reminded me I took the Saints in that like Super Bowl challenge to make the Super Bowl, but I'm picking the Bucks this week. So, okay. You know, that's the problem with these things.
No,
like
hard feelings.
You're covered either way. You're, yeah. You know, like
I picked, I have Saints 24, Bucks 21 in overtime. But I'll tell you one, like I need Will Lutz.
Ooh.
To be a little bit more, he's. It seems like what's
lately.
Happening in the kicker club at 2:12 in the morning before these games. But Will Lutz has not been the consistent force of old.
Who did they just sign? They just
like
signed
Will Klutz.
Yeah, they signed a kicker this week just to have in reserve, just because Lutz has been a little
Lutz has been revoked. His open bar privileges have been revoked. He's not allowed in
thing.
The champagne room. So right now he's just like. The nerd at the end of the bar hoping that a girl will talk to him.
Oh, yeah, it's Blair Walsh. They have Blair Walsh.
Not Blair Walsh. Now, you don't tell me I have a kicker problem and the way to solve it is let's get Blair Walsh on the field in a playoff game.
Well, it's not happening this week, but he's on their practice squad right now, Blair Walsh.
What sort of female inhabitants are allowed into the kicker club? I thought it was just kickers hanging out together. How would you decipher who's allowed in?
Well, there is like a big undercurrent, bubbling undercurrent of groupies, kicker groupies.
A big undercurrent,
yes.
Okay.
And that is what we're talking about. Just think like Led Zeppelin on tour 1975.
All right. You can tell me more about it maybe offline.
Blair Walsh, of course, missed like a 9-yard field goal to cost the Vikings a playoff win against the Seahawks about 5 years ago. So. I don't know, man. That's what you brought in the building to say.
I mean, in like negative 80 degree weather, but fair enough. The ball probably weighed like 250 pounds.
It was a 2-yard kick. I mean, all he had to do was touch it, and it was going over the crossbar.
Lutz would have to go like 0-for-3 in a win or something, I think, to see Blair Walsh next week. But
all right,
tough.
Which takes us to the final game we're going to discuss. It is the other NFC tilt to decide who goes. To the championship game. Mark, how about this, if you want to look at it like this as a Browns fan? Because it's been a long time for me, but divisional round weekend, when your team's in it, you're 2 wins away from the Super Bowl. How about that? Just get 2 more dubs.
It's a lot to ask, but it's clubbed up twice. Surreal territory. That's why I'm trying to be optimistic. Why go into this negative?
I'm with you.
All right, here we go. I'm with you. You picked the Chiefs and locked
them
up.
Well, that's why I think it's just my guilt coming through. I'm really reconsidering because I think my heart actually believes the Rams have less of a chance to win. But I had to take one of those.
No, Greg, stick with the Chiefs. Right, stick with them. Trust me.
Let's hit it. Packers 13-3. Rams 11-6. Again, I am now essentially a commentator in the lock competition. So I'll just tell you right off the bat, I'm picking Packers and I'm locking them up here at home, coming off the bye against Jared Goff, most likely, who's been practicing in full. John Wolford obviously is in a tough spot, coming off that stinger. Let's start here, Mark. Do I really feel good, and all due respect to the Rams on defense, but do I really feel like Jared Goff is going to make enough plays in this game, playing in potentially snowy conditions, in Lambeau Field, needing to throw the ball in a matchup against opposite Aaron Rodgers? I do not feel good about that at all. You're going to need something very special. You're going to need some Browns-type circumstances, a snap going over a quarterback's head, interceptions on tip balls, for this to be a game to me. What do you think?
I'm with you. I mean, we've gotten word that John Wolford is actually out, so that at least settles the drama around the quarterback situation.
Poor guy.
And everything we've seen from Jared Goff and everything that we're hearing from, you know, in subtext and decisions made by Sean McVay says that your lack of confidence in that quarterback is felt by various people inside the organization, I think, right now. This is a quarterback with notoriously small hands. He is a fumbler. He throws interceptions at terrible times. I don't know about doll hands. I mean, I don't know what size the doll is, but I'd be concerned. The one thing is, and I think that's getting a little forgotten, in what I'm hearing day after day is this, like, Rams defense, and legitimately, is so pumped up that, like, this matchup will be titanic. It could be. It could also be 21-3 at halftime if the Rams offense can't produce. I think that their ground game, if you get the good version of Cam Akers, you got something going on there. If you get a mistake-free version of Jared Goff, they can hang in a game. If you have your Darius Williams of the world, Aaron Donald says he's healthy. If Jalen Ramsey can erase Devontae Adams to some degree, that's your way. That's it. I mean, this is the. I never thought we'd say back in September that the bigger coaching storyline for the Rams is not Sean McVay but Brandon Staley, who's become like the patron saint of think pieces and people being obsessed with assistant coaches as they are coordinated. It's Brandon Staley right now, and I mean the bigger task is probably Sean McVay figuring out how to get this offense to compete in a game where they might have to score a bunch of points.
Right. I mean, the Packers defense quietly finished the season much stronger than they did early in the year, including that Titans game. And I think an average defense right now is shutting down this Rams group. And so that it's just a tough, it's a tough margin for error. There was nothing we saw from Goff last week that I found any different than what we saw before. It's part of it is his thumb. A couple balls came out wobbly, so that's it's not on him, but it's what he's playing with. But more of it was his processing. Always a little bit of a beat late. You know, the two big plays they got were a little fluky, a little hard to repeat. It was that scramble by Goff that led to the long Akers, you know, run on the short pass, and then that kind of moon ball that Kupp came down with. It's tough. It's tough to win a game like that. But I think there's at least a chance that Brandon Staley, the man that McVay hired, because Brandon Staley was best equipped to stop a Sean McVay offense, that's why he hired him, is equipped to stop this Packers offense somewhat. Yeah. Aaron Jones is going to have a chance, I think, to have a big game because it's all going to be about the coverage and it's all going to be about stopping the Packers passing game. And they'll probably live with Aaron Jones going off.
If the Rams were to pull off the upset, I just feel like that's what everybody would be talking about Monday morning. What a masterpiece right. put together by the Rams coaching staff who figure out a way to defuse this Aaron Rodgers offense and scheme up a way to get enough points. I also, like, not to pile on the Rams in terms of my feelings about how this game's going to play out, and we have a very special guest who's just about to join us who's going to be very mad at me. I know Aaron Donald said this week he doesn't even feel his rib injury anymore. But that's what guys say when it's the playoffs, and he's obviously no way he's going to miss this game. Aaron Donald's the best defensive player in the league. He might be the best player in the league, depending on who you talk to. But that cartilage injury he suffered in his rib cage was bad enough that it took him off the field for the entire second half of a hotly contested game in the wild card round. And even if, and you know, he's being managed this week, and that makes sense. But once you're going full speed and you're lunging and attacking and falling on quarterbacks and engaging in hand-to-hand battle with offensive linemen, I don't feel great that injury is not going to pop up again. And if it pops up and he reaggravates it, is it going to be bad enough where it takes him off the field entirely? Like that, there is a scenario. And now let's bring her in. Lakeisha, come on in. The great Lakeisha Jackson Wessling. Beautiful as always. I like the new hairstyle. There is a scenario here, Lakeisha, where Aaron Donald exits in the second quarter with a reaggravation of his injury. Jared Goff can't throw the football. I guess Blake Bortles is the backup.
Yes.
And this game just goes completely sideways and becomes the blowout of the divisional round weekend. Tell me why this premonition that's coming into my mind is a bunch of baloney.
Well, I will say this. I agree exactly what you said about Aaron Donald. That freaks me out because especially playing in the cold, we don't know how that's going to react. But you have to remember that it's Aaron Donald. So even if he's at, 60%, that could be everybody else's 100%. So if he's going to be out there, I know he's going to give it his all. So that's the number one thing, that if he's doing great, then I know we're doing great and our defense can pull us through. Offense is where it gets a bit scary for me. So,
right. Like Donald is potentially, you know, Troy Aikman said he's the best player he's ever seen, better than mm-hmm. like, so, not only that, he's at his absolute peak. So you would, if I had to guess, he probably has a broken rib, you know, that they're not going to announce that. That's a problem. But if he was right, their defensive line's been playing good, you know, not just him. And, you know, the Packers are without Bakhtiari. They've got a great mm-hmm. offensive line, but their guard that they put in there, they got Billy Turner and Rick Wagner. I mean, you got Leonard Floyd. Like, you could see it. And then Ramsey, to me, is the bigger X factor.
Yes.
Like, Ramsey talks a lot of talk. This is the toughest matchup you can possibly have. If you can actually shut down Davante Adams and the Packers are the most number one receiver dependent team in the league, then you got a shot. I guess I got to see it before I believe it.
That's like the one thing I'm really looking forward to watching. It's like, I'm hoping it's not a blowout game, but like my eyes are going to stay on Davante and Ramsey.
Mm-hmm. I think you have reason to think that Ramsey can do this. I mean, it's kind of been like matchup free. He's just been that dominant. I thought there was a moment in the last week's game where, you know, and we talked about this before, Lakeisha, that there's no better feeling if you're a Rams fan than sending the Seahawks into utter turmoil that, you know, results in firings and mayhem and Twitter posts from, you know, Russell Wilson. But there was a moment where Ramsey is just wagging his finger all over the place. And it's like, there are times when he can be annoying when he was on the Jaguars, for instance, but he is at the height of his powers and gives you hope in this game. I would wonder, I hate to have to do this because like the show's about to end, but I haven't done my lock yet. And maybe if you could, Lakeisha, just cover your ears real quick, just for the record, I have to lock up the Packers. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I know. And Chris is doing the same, so I don't know about locking. Don't say that, though. But
it's Keisha against the world. Lakeisha is legit Rams fan, and she's she's an unusual Rams fan. In fact, let me read a pinned tweet atop her fine profile, which you can get at Lakeisha Jackson. And Lakeisha, by the way, in addition to doing great work for NFL and being the rock of all rocks for Chris Wessling, has her NFL Uncorked video series, which you need to check out. Here's the tweet. Yeah. Going from a St. Louis Rams fan to an LA Rams fan is brutal. It's like getting back together with an ex that all of your friends hate. Sigh. Lakeisha is a St. Louis native who moved to LA and then the team followed her here, which is very unusual and unique. Now that enough time has passed, do you still have some of that residual guilt or issues with, you know, friends that hate your ex?
Not anymore, but I will say for the first like year or so, it was really hard. People thought that I knew something when I moved out here. And it's just like, no, like that's, you know, not an insider. That did not happen on purpose. But even like with the first, you know, 1 or 2 years, we were even getting good. I was very, very hesitant to like post pictures and say too much because it was hard. And I felt bad. I wasn't, you know, I was sad for my city, but you know, after a while I had to post something saying like, hey, I got to live my life. And these are my boys. So I'm riding hard for them. LA Rams.
You know, you don't need friends that don't support your happiness. You know, you had to go through Jeff Fisher. You came out here.
I suffered through all that. And now I'm in the glory years.
Got yourself a husband, you know, great job. You know, these people, they need to support you.
Yes. They're happy for me now though.
I was with you on the metaphor. Now I'm not tracking it. Is the husband the Rams or is it Wes?
No, the husband in this case was the Wes. Wes.
Yeah. Speaking of Wes, Lakeisha, how is our man right now?
He's doing a little bit better this week. It's not huge, but we'll take any little, you know, significant, like little progresses, just, you know, slowly, just taking it day by day. It's hard to kind of get too excited because as you guys have noticed, whenever, you know, something good will happen, it's like we'll take two steps forward. So it's just living it each day by day.
And I'd have to ask along with that, like Link, not sure how many days he's been on the earth, but is he mowing the lawn? Is he helping out around the house?
About time.
Doing his part.
I was worried because he had just woke up when I got on. I'm like, oh goodness, I hope they can't hear him screaming, but he's growing so fast. Like I know I said this last time, but every day, like he just makes us so happy. And now that he's able to crawl and go wherever he wants to, the cutest thing that he does is we ended up getting a recliner to help Chris sleep. So if Chris is like up in the recliner, his blanket sometimes will like hang over on the floor and Link will always like crawl over and like put his head on it and like look up and talk to him. And kids just know, like babies are smart. They know like when you need that extra like love and like, you know, dad, you know, I'm still here. You can do this.
Yep. It's obviously been such a challenge for you guys, but having Link in there, I can't imagine that's the light of life in the home.
Getting so much personality.
Yeah. I can't wait to get to know him better. Unfortunately, the pandemic is keeping us from really getting to know Link, but in time we will. Pick the game. We need your pick, Lakeisha.
You know I'm going Rams.
There you go. See, you got to talk to Shook. Shook's picking against the Browns for the second straight week. No. What's the final score of this game?
Final score? Let's go 23-10.
Ooh, oh, not even close.
See, that's the exact score. That's a good pick. That's the score that Peter King's leading with his Monday morning quarterback. Brandon Staley and Sean McVay cooked up the game plan of their lives.
Yes.
23-10. All right. Good.
I love it. My fingers crossed.
You got to give at least a chance of the old, like, Sean McVay, LaFleur matchup. You know, we used to call him what was he? The boy?
The flower?
Know?
Or the boy with the beard?
The bearded boy?
He basically got hired because he was associated with Sean McVay. Mm-hmm. And so you're not Sean McVay. I'm Sean McVay. That's what he says, hopefully. Although I did pick the Packers 20.
Does he say that to him or does he say that internally?
I don't know what he says. I love Keisha, by the way, because when I told her about, when we talked about coming on the pod, she's not like excited to talk Rams necessarily, but her first response is just like, I'm so excited to see you guys. So
this is
the best
because of COVID. This is so annoying, but this is like, I feel like, you know, we're at Rocco's just chatting it up, talking football like we normally do, or at Absolutely. The cozy. Like,
to better times, we'll all be together again sooner rather than later, hopefully. All right. That's it. Good show. Lakeisha, you're the perfect woman in a lot of ways. You
thanks
got it
for
all.
Having me on.
Beauty, brains, loyal, no sports. I don't know if she can cook. Can you cook?
Not as good as Wes.
Yeah, Wes got
you. Well, so you found that, see, you're good at finding the perfect compliment where you're not shiny.
Get a little possessive about the food Wes makes.
Yes, I love to eat.
She had to have a little thing for her, you know.
Anyway, you're the best. And we'll be back on... Well, two things. We have our television show, which is not this show. It's a totally different show that's previewing divisional round weekend that will air on NFL Network tomorrow at 3 p.m., either Eastern or Pacific.
Pacific. It's 6 Eastern.
And there will be replays. 6 Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, and there will be re-airs. So just check it out and DVR it. If you're overseas, I think you could track it down on International Game Pass. But that's just a guess. At some point, I'm going to nail down.
Could we have tied up by, like, rope and, you know, whatever else to be on at 6 p.m. on NFL Network? I feel like that's a violent coup.
I'm giving Erica the credit for that. I'm sure she was stumping behind the scenes. And then we'll be back, hopefully, with Chris Wessling, the other Wessling, on Sunday night for the divisional round playoff recap. It is the greatest football weekend of the year, pound for pound. So let's all enjoy it. Everyone stay safe, stay well. And I have a new rule on this podcast. Mark, we're playing out every ATN podcast, including through the offseason, with that Brown song, until Cleveland's been eliminated from the playoffs. So that's our new outro music, until Cleveland's gone. That's what it is.
All right. Well, we'll see. I hope it's, you know, another 8 or 9 or 10 shows, please.
All right. Hit it, Ricky. All right. This is Dan Hansen signing off for Keish, the old boss. I love this song. The Quiet Storm and Ricky Hollywood behind the virtual glass. Until Sunday. Show you how the game is played. Here we go again. 54, 55, 64. You can find the trophy on the old age shore. Now the orange and brown coming back for more. Here we go again. I said, here we go again. It's the Cleveland Browns and it's 1st and 10. So get on your feet and let the games begin. Let's here we go again. We'll be right back.
10. So get on your feet and let the games begin. Cause here we go again.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.